This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
An interesting trade to come back from the long holiday weekend, with quarter wheat relatively firm, but the soy complex under pressure on Tuesday. Welcome into Market Talk. Thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate you making us part of your day as we take a look at the markets and issues impacting rural America. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. I hope you had a fantastic long holiday weekend. Traders coming back on Tuesday, taking a look at this market. A lot of outside macro factors weighing in once again, and really weighing on the soy complex, especially as we work through it into a new holiday shortened week here this week. Some spread trading between corn and soybeans seen on the day on Tuesday. We're going to talk about all of that coming up with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's going to join us in segment two and three to discuss what he's seeing in the market trade here coming back from the holiday. Also, we're going to take a look at weather. That is a factor still as well, especially in this soy complex, helping to hold up some of these trend yield ideas here for the soybean crop. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien is going to join us at the end of the show today to discuss what he's seeing in the weather forecast for the week ahead. First up, though, let's get a little taste of what's going on in the market trade on Tuesday. Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX. I talked with him around midday Tuesday for our midday comments. And I asked Arlen's thoughts about what he's seeing in the grains and oil seeds, including news out of Argentina about their peso to dollar relationship helping to spur some selling of farmers there. That seems to be weighing on the soy complex. Here's Arlen's thoughts on what's going on in the grains first.
Yeah, it's an interesting market. We're really lacking a lot of real strong fundamental direction, although, we are getting some sense of calm in the outside markets, and that is allowing the grain and oilseed markets to look at the fundamentals a little bit more. With that, we have wheat basically chopping sideways within a trading range again. We have corn that was mostly down last week, but overall in the bigger picture, it's still slowly trending higher. And soybeans that have been trending lower. And that's because in volatile markets, when traders aren't sure which way things are going, they'll tend to go towards spread trades more. And if you look at the corn market, it's facing declining yield estimates, and USDA is expected to confirm that on Monday with its next monthly crop report. On the other hand, yield estimates have been holding up for soybeans. So that gives them a reason to spread corn against soybeans. And then you look at this over the weekend, actually yesterday, when Argentina announced that they were going to allow soybeans to be sold by farmers and be rewarded with a 200 peso to a dollar ratio, which just shows really how ultimately weak the peso is in Argentina. And in the first day of that action, that resulted in 1 million metric tons of soybeans being sold. Most of that is not going to end up in the wholesale soybean market. Most of it's going to end up being ground or processed as soy meal and soy oil, but it's used as one more excuse to sell soybeans while buying corn.
Now, Arlen, that peso to dollar ratio in Argentina, does that speak to some of the broader issues that are going on out there in the world economy that are kind of an outside factor to what's going on in our ag trade right now?
It really does, and this is something that I commented to our clients in my wire this morning, that this is just one more symptom of what's going on with countries that have a large amount of dollar-denominated debt. Argentina made this move because they're getting very low on capital reserves, foreign capital reserves, I should say, needed to make their debt payments. And a number of countries that have dollar-denominated debt right now are in real trouble because they have to be able to generate those dollars to make those debt payments. And the dollar is very expensive. It's at 20-year highs, set new 20-year highs this week. And so we're looking at a pending possible global credit crisis right now, mostly among emerging nations. And Argentina is just the first to really show some evidence of that problem. I think we're going to see other countries following suit.
Arlen, any thoughts on the livestock trade here on this Tuesday as we come back from the holiday weekend? Looking fairly strong in cattle so far, with the hog trade a little bit more mixed. Any thoughts on the protein sector?
Yeah, kind of going different ways with the fundamentals right now between cattle and hogs. So it's a little bit impressive that we actually see any green at all on the screen for the hog futures. When we saw a sharp decline in cash hog prices last week, we're seeing a weaker demand for product, although I think the market's starting to behave in here like maybe the numbers going forward won't be quite what we've seen in the past. And as far as hogs to slaughters, we go forward. With high feed prices, maybe we won't see the level of expansion that we once thought. But overall, this is a market right now still facing declining demand for product, as well as rising carcass weights and rising numbers of hogs and declining cash prices. When we look on the cattle market, though, shortened slaughter week, same as hogs with the holiday weekend, but yet last week's slaughter surprises to the upside of about 17,000 higher than what it was a year ago. The opposite was true in the hogs, where we saw slaughter actually being up 35,000 from year ago numbers. As we look at the cattle overall, last week's cash price was weaker because of the approaching holiday, but there's still a sense that we got declining numbers of cattle coming in the fourth quarter, and especially declining production in the next year. And particularly as we get into next year and we start turning around that liquidation of the breeding herd and we start rebuilding now that they're getting rains in the southern plains, going to have pasture again. That means holding back heifers, and that's going to tighten up the supply more. So we get a little bit more fund money coming into the cattle market today.
And that is comments and market analysis with Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX, joining us around midday on Tuesday with his look at what is going on in the market trade coming back from the holiday weekend. And again, we're going to talk to Matt Bennett of agmarket.net coming up here in just a little bit. Another news story I wanted to mention we're following as well. The Kansas City Fed says strong growth in farm real estate debt pushed agricultural loan balances higher at commercial banks in the second quarter. Outstanding farm debt increased by 5% from last year, the fastest pace in almost 6 years. While agricultural real estate loans continued to build, production lending rose more modestly following subdued demand in recent years. Loan performance continued to improve. Recent loan growth supported a slight improvement in the interest margins and income at agricultural banks from last quarter, but bank liquidity remained abundant. The agricultural economy remained steady over the past quarter, providing ongoing support to farm finances. With substantially higher production costs and weather risks, incomes could be pressured if commodity prices drop more notably. Despite some growing risks, farm balance sheets remained strong alongside high liquidity, and a sharp increase in farm real estate values.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk.
And again, that
now,
is
back to Jesse Allen.
The Kansas City Fed, just something else. And joining us now to talk about the market trade action seen on Tuesday, we saw a bit of soybean spreading against
all right,
corn.
Coming up next, we're going to continue our look at what's happening in the market trade.
Wheat markets up a little
Matt
bit with corn.
We've got plenty to talk about. Let's welcome in Matt Bennett with agmarket.net.
Matt,
good to have you back on the show. Fresh back home from Farm Progress Show last week. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. You know, it was a good week at Farm Progress Show. I'll tell you what, I've been to Iowa at the Boone grounds several times in the past, and I'll tell you, the weather wasn't worth a darn. this time, you know, you get out there in the morning, it was 70 degrees. I mean, just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. They got a little hot in the afternoon, don't get me wrong, but overall, you know, I mean, there's been two different years I remember that we've had to cancel at least a day of the show because it was a mud fest out in the parking lot, which is, you know, it's an alfalfa field. So obviously, mm-hmm. if you get a lot of rain, you got some issues there, which, you know, Decatur's the same way. You know, you park in a hay field and you just kind of roll the dice on what Mother Nature's going to give you. But I would say one thing about the Iowa at Boone, you know, it seems to me like they've continued to make improvements, adding some bathrooms, and the roads are all paved now, and very similar to Decatur, almost the exact same feel as Decatur, and it sure is a nice place to have Farm Progress Show.
I couldn't agree more. It's a great time. I know both of us had a lot of awesome conversations with growers and with folks in the ag industry, and I was glad we got a chance to catch up a little bit last week as well. Let's turn our attention to this week. Looking at Tuesday's trade, coming back from the three-day holiday weekend, we saw soybeans products kind of getting the short end of the spreads, a lot of pressure there. And I think a lot of factors weighing on soybeans, Matt. I know we've heard about this Argentine, this peso to dollar ratio, 200-1. China with more COVID lockdowns, I think that has some worry. Also, you know, just the thought that soybeans could hold on to their trend yield or close to it as we get into next Monday's WASDE report. It seemed like a lot of things really weighed on the soy complex Tuesday, and then the algos kind of just pushed it further to the downside. What are your thoughts with soybeans?
Yeah, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. So essentially, I think whenever it comes to beans, overall, August weather has been pretty decent. Not for everyone, but overall, you've had enough places get some rains, cooled off. It's pod filling weather that a lot of folks would like to see, especially as compared to what we saw, for instance, in the month of July for a lot of people, especially west of Mississippi. It just dries a bone and hot, you know. And then, of course, you add in this situation with Argentina, and you know, there's no question those producers, man, I tell you what, that's a challenge. Why do they keep their commodities as it's a hedge against inflation, you know, because they know darn good and well that if they step out there and sell and they end up having to buy their fertilizer or whatever it is that they're buying at a significantly different rate, I mean, it can just absolutely kill them. So they've got a whole host of different issues. Well, essentially, it's going to make their beans cheaper, as we know, and it's going to give them the opportunity to get a little more aggressive on the world market. So, you know, a couple of things come to mind. I mean, obviously, corn performed significantly better than soybeans. It's not the first day that we've seen this happen. I made a comment to one of my guys that sometimes likes to look at that soybean to corn ratio. Said, I'll tell you what, during that Pro Farmer Tour, we should have been buying corn and selling beans the first couple of days, because it was obvious that the trend of this crop has been that the bean crop is better, relatively speaking, than the corn crop. And it's not by a small margin either. Now, I do think there's a lot of decent corn out there, but at the same time, I tell you, we're starting to get some yields roll in. Heard some yields in Iowa today. You know, I don't know what it was, producer, 250, 260 last year, and it was 90 bushel corn, and this was southwest of Des Moines, you know, maybe 30, 40 minutes. So, yeah, I tell you what, there's definitely going to be some issues. Like, I'm sure I've told you this, but I feel like you've got a lot of 2012 folks, and you got a lot of 2018 folks. So it's going to be hard to figure out, you know, what your final national yield is going to be. For next Monday, 171.9. That's what we came up with. Now, I'm not saying that we're right. I feel like we're a little bit above Pro Farmer, but I don't know that we're all the way up at 179, quite frankly. I just don't think the USDA is going to get more than half as far as the difference between those two numbers. I don't think they're going to go all the way down to a Pro Farmer type number, but that's just our guess, you know, if you will, this report. But beans were 51.9. I will say that we're 51.9 for beans. And to reference something you said earlier, I'm not so sure that the bean yield won't be bigger than 51.9 when it's all said and done. So I think you got to keep that in the back of your mind as a producer. I mean, are you going to throw cold water on $14 beans? I don't know if that's a good idea.
It seems to me, to kind of surmise, you know, what you just said there as well, it feels like this soybean complex definitely has some bearish pressure to the downside. Tuesday, we closed just below 14 on November beans, kind of that key psychological support area. And to me, it just feels like heading into next Monday, we got a crop progress report out Tuesday afternoon. We got a lot of different things. Just feels like there is plenty of bearish downside risk in soybeans right now, Matt.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that you could take a dollar out of this bean market pretty quick, and I don't know that too many people would be shocked. I know that whenever I was at Farm Progress Show, that's one thing that I asked a lot of folks is on this bean market, you know, would you be surprised if the market fell a dollar, you know, in the next week or two? And everybody's shaking their head no. And then next question I asked is, so you guys are pretty heavily hedged then, is what you're telling me. And then nobody wants to answer that question, because we all know that a lot of times when we've got high prices, especially – I feel like whatever it lasts for a longer period of time, and we've had high prices for quite some time. You can argue with me all you want. $14 beans are not cheap beans, but you know, you get lulled to sleep sometimes. You think, I've got some time. I'm going to go ahead and market them when they get back closer to 15. Well, big problem with that statement is that they don't always get back closer to 15 or whatever it is number that you're looking at. And so, yeah, there's downside pressure. I've got to think that overall, one thing that we haven't really mentioned or I haven't mentioned yet, you know, the Brazilian producer is going to produce a lot of beans this year. If they get any help at all from Mother Nature, I mean, you know, I talked to Eric Snodgrass. I actually did an interview with him, did some of what you did. You know, Betsy does that with us sometimes. We does video with folks that, you know, that have some contribution as far as market mentality and whatnot. And Eric just said, I think we're going to have La Nina hold on. But he said, after the first of the year on the calendar, he said, I just don't know that things going to be able to hold together. He's looking for a little bit more normal type production this year. So if that's the case and you have 150 million metric ton crop out of Brazil, I'll tell you what, that's going to mean that the world supply and demand balance sheet is going to continue to be what I would call not snug. I mean, it's going to be robust, if you will. Talk to several Brazilian growers at the Farm Progress Show, and they basically reiterated everything I just said. They said, hey, guess what? We're going to be coming at you with more acres this year, and we're going to be coming at you with more acres next year, and so on and so forth. And that trend's not going to stop anytime soon.
Matt, as well, circling back to, you mentioned agmarket.net, your corn number going into next Monday's report. To you, in your mind, a number around that 171, 172 range, is that what it's going to take to remain neutral to bullish in this corn market? Or what do you think? If USDA only comes down slightly, I'd have to think, you know, would the trade look at that as bearish, or weigh all the other factors and all the other stories we're hearing across the country about how the crop looks, Matt?
I think if you printed a 174, it's going to be a bearish number. I'll tell you what, that would not be pleasant. If you print a 170 and a half to a 172, I don't know that you really move the needle significantly. Man, I'll tell you what, you get a 1.6 at the start of that number, and I think that you're probably going to see this market stay very well supported. You know, even if it's a 169, 169 and a half, I don't think it has to be down to Pro Farmer's number. I think most people realize, I mean, and maybe they don't. Last year, you know, Pro Farmer hit the nail on the head with the final USDA yield of that 177. And so, you know, they have refined and fine-tuned their process over the years, and it's an excellent one. I've been on the tour several times. My personal bias is that I do think there's some just awfully good corn outside of the routes that they typically go on. The bottom line is this: they don't get down to, for instance, Shelby County in Illinois. And I know what I've got in this part of the world, and I know what a lot of folks right in here have. And given everything, it's probably, relatively speaking, the best corn, as good a corn as what there is. And I talked to several growers in southern Minnesota, and I know the Pro Farmer Tour goes through there, and they saw that. And of course, Minnesota is what you saw is the biggest yield, you know, the most friendly yield. I guess the best yield versus expectations would be the best way to put it. But I think that you're going to maybe see Illinois well above the 200 level instead of 198. That's just my thought. I think that where the good is, it's going to be awfully good, you know, and where the poor is, I understand it'll be APH or below. But in Illinois, I don't think you're going to have any absolute train wrecks like we've seen, you know, maybe in parts of Iowa. I think there's going to be some train wrecks. I think Illinois will beat Iowa this year on yield. But bottom line is, I think you're still going to raise good enough crop that, you know, we're not going to run out of corn by any means. It's going to be tight. This can be real tight. You throw a 168 or 9 into the balance sheet, and all of a sudden you're looking at a sub 1 billion. That's extremely bullish. Now, I don't think the USDA will let that number get printed on carry, but if they do, I'll tell you what, I sure wouldn't want to be short this market.
That's Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. We'll continue our conversation next here on Market Talk.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back as we continue Market Talk here today. Thanks so much for joining us. Jesse Allen with you here as we take a look at the markets and issues impacting rural America here on the program. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, our guest analyst. We're going to get back to our conversation with Matt here in just a minute. Want to look at some of the closing numbers from Tuesday's action. Let's start in grains. Spot September was up 11 and 3 quarters at 680 and 3 quarters. December corn up 10 and a quarter, 676. March corn up 10 and a half at 680. 1 3/4. In wheat, Chicago wheat, September up 7 at 8 even. December up 6, 817. March, Chicago wheat up 4 3/4, 832. Kansas City wheat, September up 7 1/2, 879. December up 4 1/4, 882. And March up 4 3/4, 883 3/4. Spring wheat fell off a bit at the close. September down 1 1/4, 871. December down 0.25, 889 3/4. And March down 3/4 at 901 3/4. Soy complex, the big loser on Tuesday, September. Spot September down 20 1/2 at 1490. November down 21 3/4, 1398 3/4. January down 21 1/2, 1403 3/4. Bean meal, October down 1340 a ton, 410.60. October bean oil down 304 points, 6490. Over in livestock real quick, October hogs 107 higher, 91.10. December up 80, 83.50. February up 37, 87.07. September feeders up 30, 184.17. October up 115 at 186.10. And live cattle October up 50, 145.05. December up 62, 150.87. February live cattle up 82, 155.20. All right, let's get back to our conversation with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net joining us here today on Market Talk. Let's talk wheat. Wheat felt a little confused coming back from the holiday break, Matt, but then seemed like it went in conjunction with corn and moved higher on the day. I think a higher U.S. dollar as well, more new 20-year highs, weighing on commodities as a whole, and I bet especially weighing on that wheat market a bit on Tuesday. Is that what did you see in wheat on Tuesday that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, wheat kind of followed the feed grains, if you will, with corn. You know, in my opinion, wheat has the ability to, you know, to rally due to what I would call fairly friendly U.S. and world, you know, supply and demand fundamentals. But at the same time, you know, you've got to understand that when it gets right down to it, you know, you can fix a wheat supply and demand situation pretty rapidly because you're always just a few weeks away from harvest anywhere in the world. And so, I don't know, for wheat, I look at it to be more of a follower this time of year. That's typically what you get. It's going to follow the corn and bean market around. And if it's going to choose one of the two, 9 times out of 10, it's going to choose the corn market. They'll walk in tandem. But my personal thought on wheat is that I wouldn't be surprised if you just kind of hung out in here and basically followed along with corn. I don't look for any sort of wild ranges in wheat anytime soon.
Matt, as well, I mentioned the dollar, and I know, you know, we're bringing back in the Argentine policy as well. A lot of, I think it shows just some of the challenges out there for some economies who maybe have large amounts of dollar-denominated debt out there. And I think this whole world recessionary fear, you throw in more COVID lockdowns in China. I think a lot of this seems like it's starting to come back to the forefront here as we maybe move our ag trade out of weather market and back to fundamentals and look at some of these macro concerns as well, Matt.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Jesse, if we didn't have talk of, you know, pushing a 1 billion carry on corn or below, I don't know that you'd see this type of market action. I'll tell you, there's a lot of issues, macro fears, you know, just what are we going to do here in the world when you're looking at a world recession potentially getting underway? You know, there's a lot of concern. I know the U.S., there's been a lot of debate. Are we in a recession? Are we not? I'm a little concerned with all these bigger companies announcing huge layoffs, you know, and I think that what you're going to find here in the next few months is, you know, that they're not going to be able to run away from the fact that we're entering in a recession. You know, obviously the politics of it are probably that we'll blame it on world recession, and very well maybe that's the reason, you know, that we're entering into one. But ultimately, I'll tell you, we've thrown a lot of money at this thing. And I'll tell you what, one thing producers need to be very mindful of is that interest rates, you know, we've been trying to move them higher to get inflation under control, and it really hasn't done it all that well yet. Tell you what, The problem with that in the past has been that then you see even bigger adjustments, and you know, you could see inflation continue to propel interest rates to levels that we really don't want to see. Now, I don't think that we can get super carried away, but I know the banker that I talked to last year was writing prepay operating loans at this time, you know, for producers who essentially hadn't able to start harvest yet. And he told me, he said last year, you know, they were loaning this money out at 3.5%, 3.25%. This year, he said they're loaning out 5.5 to 6. And so, you know, you start borrowing them a couple million dollars and that can add up pretty darn quick. And obviously with these input costs where they are, those operating loans are still going to be rather large. And so that's one thing we haven't even touched, you know, is this fertilizer market, which could be directly impacted by your, what your question is, you know. So a lot of these players in the world, you know, that are putting, able to put fertilizer out on the world market, they're fully aware, you know, whether you're talking about, well, nat gas, you know, coming out of Russia, you know, they're aware of what that's going to do to the price of nat gas by shutting that off to the EU. Just the same as they're aware what not selling fertilizer could do to the price of fertilizer. So the bottom line is that we better understand that if we can lock really good profit margins in right now and not be prone to waking up in the morning to some sort of absolute catastrophe in the world, I think we better be doing so. Lock in some worst case scenarios. You know, you can play the long side later.
Very, very true. Great points there. I want to have time for livestock today, Matt. Cattle and hogs, so both finished all right. Cattle markets seem to be the leader, though, coming back from the holiday weekend. And it feels like maybe some traders, maybe packers got to get in there. Haven't maybe bought enough cattle here the last couple of weeks. Maybe need to do some buying this week. What's your thoughts on this cattle market right now?
When you see the cattle market rally, whenever corn's up to double digits, You know, I've been bullish cattle for a while. And I'll tell you, if you can keep the equities to hold together, this cattle market's going to be a dynamic situation. You're going to see numbers that are going to suggest that we should definitely rally cattle on out through the fourth quarter into the first quarter next year, second quarter next year. And I think the real fireworks are probably going to begin after you turn the calendar. But, you know, there's a lot of folks looking at that right now. If you look, Jesse, I mean, you 145, 150, 155, 158, you know, you've got a nice little carry in the market, and there's a lot of folks that are betting on the same type of thing that we're talking about, that this demand for cattle is going to be awfully strong. I'll tell you what, I think some of these guys I know like right now would like to buy feeders for $200. I know what they are on the board. We all know that the cash market runs in excess of the board, but I know parts of the U.S. where folks are wishing that they could buy them for $200. So those people obviously are betting on the same thing we're talking about as well. So this cattle market is going to be interesting. And again, don't rule out, though, that if the equities fall apart and the consumer doesn't feel like they can afford to buy beef, this cattle market's not going to be able to do what it should do with the type of supply and demand fundamentals we're looking at.
And I think another thought as well in this cattle market, I think you and I have touched on this, just the fact, you know, look at where corn's at this year and look at some of those bad areas for corn, right in the heart of feedlot country. So is that corn going to be able to move from east to west via rail, via truck? How's that going to impact feed costs and more as we get farther here into the fourth quarter, Matt?
Yeah, and so I will tell you that I do know a buyer in one part of Kansas that's bought a fair amount of corn that is going to be going into the heart of cattle country, and they paid $1.85 over for it. And this would be like a December through May timeframe, you know, a little bit each month. And the part of the world that it's coming from is from my home state, from Illinois. And so, you know, what you're going to see is you're going to see a tug of war. I mean, you get farther east than Ohio and they don't grow enough corn. So that's a corn deficit area. So they pull corn, you know, from a lot of times from Indiana, Ohio. You're going to see a tug of war coming right, in my opinion, with Illinois. It's almost going to be like a seesaw type situation. And basis is going to be reflective of what's going on in those parts of the world. So, again, a lot of those cattle got liquidated because they didn't have anything to feed them. Pastures dried up, don't have enough hay. They're going to need corn. And so they're going to have to pay to get it there. And what's that mean? Basis is going to be pretty dynamic. Now, I think some of your early numbers, like right now through the next 6 weeks, could be some of the better basis levels you see, quite frankly. But I think after that, if the crop doesn't perform, yeah, basis may fall back. But the reason for that might be that the board could continue to stay strong to even moving higher as far as corn's concerned. So, yeah, basis is going to be extremely dynamic moving forward. But I do think some of the better numbers will be printed early.
Very true. I should ask hogs as well. I noticed that October lead month contract on the board starting to inch closer to the cash. Maybe it's something we'll see them come together in the next week or two. What's your thoughts with hogs, Matt?
Yeah, I think that it's very possible. You know, hogs have been such a crazy market to try to trade. You know, it all depends on what the money's doing whenever it comes to hogs. I mean, we all know that numbers here in the U.S. aren't exactly robust. We know that China still has strong demand, but, you know, you can say, hey, they're going to back off on their economy. It's one thing I talked about quite a bit at Farm Progress Show is we got 1.3 billion people eating a better diet than what they ate 10 years ago. They're going to continue to eat a better diet. And I know that there's ways you can control that to an extent in a, you know, in a communist country. But at the same time, I mean, we all know that there's only so much you can do there. So I feel like you're going to still see very strong demand out of that part of the world. And you're still going to see pork prices stay relatively, competitive. Now, I don't see $100 hogs moving forward, at least in your front months. To me, it's going to take a heck of a lot of fund interest to see that happen. And I just don't see it happening right away.
Matt, always appreciate the time. I know if folks want to get a little advice, they can reach out to you and the team there at agmarket.net very easily. A couple different ways. How can folks get a hold of you guys?
Yeah, just agmarket.net or agmarket.app. Either one of those places is a great place to find our, you know, our technology, our research, contact info. So either one of those.
Fantastic. Well, Matt, always a pleasure, sir. Enjoy the rest of your week, and thanks for joining us here today. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Absolutely, bud. You have a great one.
And again, that's Matt Bennett of agmarket.net. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the weather outlook for the week ahead. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien joins us after the break. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to talk weather coming out of the long three-day holiday weekend, Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien. Eric, good to catch up with you, buddy. Hope you had a productive, or should I say, relaxing holiday weekend, sir.
Yeah. You know, it was cool and rainy here where I'm in Illinois, and so we were inside quite a bit this weekend, but certainly it was a weekend that I won't forget for a long time, given how much heat we saw across the Western United States, breaking some all-time records in California. That's pretty tough to do. So to see that heat going there, it meant that some folks out west were really under the gun for heat and wildfire smoke, both things.
Definitely. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. You mentioned that heat, some records being broken, looking at fairly dry weather map, at least to start the week, and that heat out west. So what is the impact? Are we going to see that heat shift more to the east here through this week? What's shaping up for us here this week?
Yeah, well, that ridge is going to open up a bit that's over the west right now. And what it's going to do is it's going to push into Montana, North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, maybe even a little bit of Western Iowa, Minnesota. Temperatures that could approach the upper 90s and low 100s. But it's that time of year where things can change pretty quickly. I mean, we're approaching fall here. And so by the end of this week, we're going to be talking about a front coming out of the Canadian prairies on Thursday into Friday. And as it sweeps through, it could drop temperatures 30 to 40 degrees. I mean, that's how big of a swing in temperatures we could get in the Western Plains, the Northern Plains, and the upper Midwest. Overnight lows as that front comes through late this week into the weekend could be down into the mid 40s. So think about that. You could have high temperatures, almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and then low temperatures 4 days later that are in the 40s. So what is that? 60 degrees almost temperature swing. It's kind of one of those, well, welcome to the plains. We get that here, you know. But the heat does stay on in the west. And with that pattern change, what I'm going to be watching carefully is from the Mississippi River east, I'm talking from the Mississippi River clear to the East Coast, we have got quite a bit of tropical moisture that's going to get pulled up later this week and weekend that could really deliver some heavier rainfall. If you're west of the Mississippi, about the only shot we've got here outside of some isolated storms that could pop on the heat, and those are unforecastable, to be honest with you. That front that comes through Thursday into Friday could bring in a line of showers and storms, kind of a pencil-thin line that rolls through the Midwest late this week. But, you know, that gets us thinking about what's also going on in the tropics. Earl's going to miss. It's going to go closer to Bermuda than it is the East Coast. We have another system that's just come off the West Coast of Africa, but it's 10 days away before we really even start having a big conversation about it. So, but the only big tropical event to speak about is Hurricane K going toward the Baja of California and May. And this is kind of rare. K may spread some rainfall into Southern California, Arizona, and Nevada. And they're pretty excited about that. That would be fantastic rain given the wildfire threat and the heat threat they've got going on now.
Well, you mentioned some of that frost risk possibly with that big temperature swing. I know that's probably something growers in the northern plains especially don't want to hear with how late things got planted up there. But as we look ahead, fall, winter, I know we have an outlook out for that a little bit as well. So kind of piggybacking off that sentiment, what are you seeing looking into fall and winter? Things going to remain dry, warm, cold? What are we looking at, Eric?
Well, we're only 15 days away from the astronomical start of fall. And with the cooler weather coming into the plains, again, lows in the mid-40s, we're going to see right away temperatures rebounding. So I don't see any indication of a mid-September, even third week of September frost threat. And by the way, they can get frost that early in that area any given year. La Nina is tending to dominate the forecast. And what that means is we tend to see drier conditions across most of the United States for September, getting into October, November. Now, the wild card is always two things: a tropical system. We just can't forecast those more than 7 to 10 days in advance. So one of those could easily come up into the south, into the mid-south, even in the eastern Corn Belt, delivering rainfall, let alone the eastern side of the whole country getting heavy rainfall from a tropical system. We also need to think about any major wave in the jet stream flow as it just starts to move itself back south. For example, what was it? Last October 13th, we had a big disruptive system that came. It was a blizzard in Montana and Idaho, severe storms in the southern plains, and then 2 to 4 inches of rain right throughout the Midwest. Those kind of systems, you know, even though the long-range forecast suggests a drier bias, they can still show up and be quite disruptive. So, you know, I guess that gives you the full range, right? But the reality of it is fall is a transition season, which means we lose our predictability at that point. But you also asked about winter. And with this La Nina going, most models have the La Nina really making a transition after the start of the new year. Now, I'm going to sit back and say, prove it to me. I want to see that occur because I thought the same thing was going to happen this past spring and it didn't happen. So I think we're going to have to watch it very carefully to see how much of a transition it makes. But as it stands, if the La Nina has a tight grip on the pattern this winter, that means wet Pacific Northwest. That means active Ohio River Valley storm track. That means more cold air and good snow in the Midwest, really the upper Midwest and plains and Canadian Prairie, but drier from California to Texas. And that is those are two locations that can't stand another drier winter.
Eric, how about South America? I know we've had a few fronts work through parts of Brazil and Argentina, I believe, in recent days. What are you seeing down there?
Yeah, so there has been some wetter weather in southern Brazil, and that's actually the area we've been most concerned about going drier into September, October, November. The new long-range models do suggest possibly an on-time start of the monsoon, which is in another 20, 30 days from now. So it usually gets going in October, which means they could plant very quickly down there. But the latest model trend was a bit drier than the previous runs, which means we've got to watch this very carefully. But the longer range forecast suggests that if there's going to be drought risk that's dominated by La Nina, which is what the models are going to sense right now, it'll be in southern Brazil, Paraguay, Argentina, and Uruguay. So they've doubled down on that with the latest update, which just came out yesterday on the 5th, that there's going to be dry conditions possibly into southern Brazil and south into Argentina. It's one of those things where we have to wait for the monsoon to establish before we really get a sense as to how dry it could be. But it's interesting to see that the last four times the models have been run, that means 4 months of data here, continue to press that drier air into southern Brazil and Argentina.
Fantastic. Well, you can sign up for his daily weather email at markettalkag.com. With that, Eric Snodgrass of Nutrient, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for joining us this week and have a great rest of your week.
Yeah, you too.
And that's all the time we have for Market Talk today. Coming up tomorrow, Mike Zuzel, Global Commodity Analytics. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a fantastic rest of your day.